Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Brando. Just an exercise today in tracking a single actor's career by listening to the music associated with the movies he made. And in the case of Marlon Brando, not only do we have an actor who, I think by consensus, did more to change the style of film acting than anybody else in the history of the job, but also someone whose films boast a stirring roster of composers. In the course of talking about Brando a little today, we're going to hear music by Leonard Bernstein, one of his only jobs writing directly for movies, Alex North, Miklos Rosa, Nino Rota, and one classic Broadway song by Frank Lesser. Not saying that Brando is any kind of great singer, but we're going to hear the song nonetheless. Then at the end of the show for the trailer, we'll hear a curious little number that ties together Brando with Tahiti. Some years ago, I read Marlon Brando's memoir, and while I suspect it leaves out a lot, and probably fictionalizes a lot too, it does give you the sense that Brando was a thoughtful and observant person, contrary sometimes to his public image. Born in Omaha in 1924, Brando went to New York City in the late 1940s and started studying acting in a serious way, as people were doing then at places like the New School and the Actors Studio. And Brando had these different attributes as an actor. On the one hand, he was a student. He was trained in observation and technique. But he was also kind of a primitive, relying on animal instincts, sometimes to the exasperation of fellow actors who could never be sure which way he would turn or how he would deliver a line from one performance to the next. You know, he was deliberate about changing acting, too. In the documentary that came out a few years ago, Listen to Me, Marlon, we learn he had very specific complaints about the kind of movie acting that dominated Hollywood before he came along, which he found involved kind of a canned delivery that made everything easy to predict. And Brando just couldn't do that. He already knew the price of acting, of participating in the charade of a happy family that was anything but. His parents were Midwestern Gothic, the father a bitter drunk who settled things with violence, the mother a poetic type who couldn't lay off the booze. The big break came when he landed one of the main roles in the Tennessee Williams play A Streetcar Named Desire in 1947, where his performance astonished audiences and opened the door to a raw kind of new acting, even though Brando, he never really liked the term method acting, but that's what it ended up being called. His first movie wasn't Streetcar, but a much smaller film called The Men from 1950, in which he played a paraplegic soldier. The movie of Streetcar Named Desire would follow in 1951. It was directed by Elia Kazan, who had selected Brando for the play. And the music of Streetcar was also a kind of innovation, bringing a sultry jazz feeling into a big Hollywood score. Alex North had been composing for the stage in New York, but Kazan brought him to Hollywood and launched his movie career, really, with Streetcar. Here are two cues from that film. We're going to hear the main title music and then a cue called Stan and Stella, referring there to the blue-collar New Orleans characters played by Brando and Kim Hunter. The score, I think, was imitated a lot after this, but see if you can imagine how fresh it must have sounded to the 1951 audience. Thank you. Music composed by Alex North. For A Streetcar Named Desire, he was Oscar-nominated for his score there, the first of 15 nominations. Marlon Brando was also Oscar-nominated. He did not win that time, although his three co-stars did. That music bristles with something Brando was getting at in his performance, I think. Some kind of blunt, but somehow sensitive American energy. Playing an anti-hero before they'd really come up with that term. And so charismatic that you could argue, and Elia Kazan worried about this effect, actually, on stage and screen, that Brando would sort of seduce the audience's sympathies in a way that didn't really suit the character's brutality. Anyway, whatever you thought about the character, Brando himself was something else again. An incredible physical presence on screen and with attitude. The character was insolent, yes, but the actor himself didn't seem to care whether you liked him or even whether you could understand what he was saying. Somehow he was doing, the things that he was doing weren't the same old thing, and he looked free. Director Kazan and composer Alex North would also be on hand for Brando's next film, Viva Zapata, from 1952, a chronicle of the Mexican hero, which allowed Brando to expand his range and allowed North to incorporate Mexican influences in his music, as you will hear.
Thank you.
music by Alex North. From the film Viva Zapata, another success for Marlon Brando in this early meteoric phase of his career. As though to prove something, Brando did Shakespeare. In a 1953 production of Julius Caesar, directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz, in which he played Mark Anthony. Because Brando was already being caricatured in the press for his mumbling and his off-screen image as some kind of barefoot bongo-playing beatnik, this was viewed with skepticism, but Mankiewicz said that Brando studied tapes of every Shakespearean actor he could find and eventually got himself into that zone. Mankiewicz said, "Marlon worked his ass off, and it's a very talented ass." Let's hear some of the music from Julius Caesar by the Hungarian composer Miklós Rózsa, who is already becoming an expert at inventing the sound of ancient Rome. Music from Julius Caesar, composed by Miklós Rózsa, who may have invented the sound of the movie Roman Empire more than any other composer. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, and we're listening to films associated with Marlon Brando. And Brando went from the respectability of Shakespeare to the decidedly trashier mode of The Wild One, which fit his image as a motorcycle-riding troublemaker. In this movie, he brings his gang to a small town and wreaks havoc. And, you know, when they ask him what he's rebelling against, his response famously is, What do you got? The score to The Wild One is by Leith Stevens, a Juilliard-trained composer whose pieces for the film were re-recorded for a couple of jazz albums in collaboration with the trumpeter Shorty Rogers. And we'll hear one of those versions of the film's music, which just happens to be titled Blues for Brando. That's a track called Blues for Brando, composed by Leith Stevens for the score of The Wild One and rearranged for a jazz ensemble led by Shorty Rogers. I think there might be something telling in the fact that the cue is not named for Brando's character in the film, but for the actor himself. Such was the power of his image at the time. And cementing that image would be Brando's Oscar-winning performance in his next film, On the Waterfront, where he plays the dock worker and ex-palooka Terry Molloy, doing battle with corruption and himself. Ilya Kazan once again directs, and the music here is by none other than Leonard Bernstein for really his lone foray into film scoring, specifically for a film, the music from West Side Story and On the Town, adapted from stage musicals. Here's how Bernstein sets the mood with a main title track and then a lively cue titled Scramble. Thank you. two selections from On the Waterfront, composed by Leonard Bernstein, and that music, both delicate and brawny, suited the sides of Brando's character very well. One more cue from that film, and this one you can't help but think of Brando, I think. It's called Glove Scene, and this accompanies Brando and Eva Marie Saint as they walk along in their tentative courtship. The scene is a classic, partly because Eva Marie Saint accidentally dropped one of her white gloves in the middle of a take. Brando stayed in character, picked up the glove, kept it. He sort of idly tries it on as they walk and talk. Totally an actor's improvisation, not something that was planned. I once interviewed Eva Marie Saint at a film festival, and she confirmed the way that moment just takes off from Brando's seeming disruption of the scene, which is real and fits the character he's playing. Here's music for that sequence from On the Waterfront. Music for the glove scene, written by Leonard Bernstein, from On the Waterfront. As Elia Kazan, the director of the film, put it, Brando, naked of soul in On the Waterfront, the best performance I've ever seen by a man in films, because it had all the tenderness and delicacy in love scenes that you could not have expected. Well, at this point, Brando remained at the top of the heap, and as though answering a challenge, he appeared in a film musical in 1955 when Joseph Mankiewicz filmed Guys and Dolls, the great Broadway hit. That show is one of the greatest of all musicals, and you might say it's so good it could even survive a leading man who can't really sing that well, but you can decide for yourself. As we hear Brando playing the gambling sharpie Skye Masterson, leading the men's chorus as they roll the dice in New York's oldest established permanent floating crap game, singing Luck Be a Lady.
They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners. You might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Lucky if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair, it isn't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. So let's keep the party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby, I'm the fella you came in with. Luck be a lady. Luck be a lady. Luck be a lady tonight. Lady wouldn't flirt with strangers. She'd have a heart, she'd have a soul. A lady wouldn't make little snake eyes at me when I bet my life on this roll. So let's keep the party polite. Never get out of my sight. Stick with me, baby, I'm the fella you came in with. Luck be a lady. Luck be a lady.
What are you scared of?
Luck be a lady tonight.
Song from Guys and Dolls, composed by Frank Lesser, Luck Be a Lady, a high point in that show. Vocalized by Marlon Brando, who thought his singing voice was akin to, and I quote, the mating call of a yak. Still, the movie is one of Brando's more relaxed and likable performances, I think. You're listening to The Music in the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, talking about music in Marlon Brando films. Later in that decade of the 50s, Brando returned to the world of Tennessee Williams and gave what I think is a fascinating performance in The Fugitive Kind, from 1960, playing a drifter in a snakeskin jacket who rolls up in a small town where Anna Magnani and Joanne Woodward are very interested to meet him. That snakeskin jacket would later be appropriated by Nicolas Cage for his Out There performance in David Lynch's Wild at Heart, by the way. Here's the title music from the film, composed by Kenyon Hopkins, a fine composer who also did the jazz-inflected score for The Hustler the following year. This is music from The Fugitive Kind. Music from The Fugitive Kind, composed by Kenyon Hopkins, a film featuring an understated and rather poetic performance by Marlon Brando, which I think that music suggests. We come now to the lone film that Brando directed in his career, One-Eyed Jacks. And as you might expect, it's a Western with a very offbeat feel to it. Maybe not a great film, but on the other hand, there's nothing else quite like it. It was supposed to be directed by this punk kid named Stanley Kubrick, but just before shooting, Brando took over and went over budget, and some of it got shot, and then it ended up flopping anyway. I've always been a sucker for Hugo Friedhofer's romantic theme music, which you'll get a dose of here in the opening credits track. That's the opening music from One-Eyed Jax, composed by Hugo Friedhofer. I remember tape recording that music back in the days before home video if the movie came on TV. And while it sounds a little old-fashioned compared to the other Brando-era music we've heard, it does set a romantic tone for this very odd movie. While that film's flop and the cost overruns on the Mutiny on the Bounty the next year did not help Brando's bankability and his choices through the 1960s, really seemed to get pretty random, which revealed the actor's own growing indifference to acting, even as he got more involved in civil rights activism. He did some interesting work, though, during this time, and I'm going to pick a couple of movies from this run because the music stands out. In 1967, Brando co-starred with Elizabeth Taylor in an adaptation of the Carson McCullers story Reflections in a Golden Eye, directed by John Huston, with Brando as a repressed major at an army base in the South, where he develops this infatuation with a soldier played by Robert Forster. The music is by a Japanese composer, Toshiro Miyazumi, and this is typical of Huston. He would come up with unusual collaborators throughout his career. Miyazumi did hundreds of films in Japan, but only a handful in the U.S. This excerpt might give a hint of how the slight strangeness of the music would help a story of people going off kilter in their lives. Thank you. That's a rarity there. Some music from Reflections in a Golden Eye, composed by Toshiro Miyazumi, underscoring a very intriguing, very committed Marlon Brando performance. One more now, before we get to the big comeback, a 1969 film called Burn, directed by the Italian filmmaker Gillo Pontecorvo, a film that seems to overlap with Brando's own politics, although it gives a somewhat fictionalized version of a story of a white adventurer messing around in Latin America as a self-appointed colonial savior. The music, though, is by the great composer Ennio Morricone, most famous for his spaghetti westerns, but also the creator of hundreds of film scores. Here's a cue that will give a bit of Morricone's great inventiveness, titled William and Jose. That's music by the great Ennio Morricone from the film Burn, one of a number of flops Marlon Brando experienced during the 1960s, but an indicator that Brando was choosing some of his projects because of his increasing interest in progressive politics. Later in his career, he would participate in small projects, like the second series of Roots, for instance, or the small South African film A Dry White Season, seemingly for the chance to lend his name to righteous causes. This is the music and the movies you're listening to right now. I'm Robert Horton, the host, and we are listening to music from the films of Marlon Brando. Well, when Francis Ford Coppola cast Brando in the title role of The Godfather in 1972, it was applauded as one of the great comebacks in movie acting. The film turned out to be a blockbuster. Brando won another Oscar. More about that night in a moment. Brando transformed himself for the role, altering the cadence and quality of his voice, stuffing his cheeks with cotton, and physically inhabiting a character like none he'd ever played before. It doesn't take much, I suppose, to summon up that image musically, because the score devised by Nino Rota became so popular it's part of the collective movie imagination, especially the, yes, love theme from The Godfather. But instead of that one, we're going to play another very memorable cue, the main title music, also known as The Godfather Waltz.
Thank you.
music by Nino Rota from The Godfather, a thrilling comeback for Marlon Brando. Our subject did win the Best Actor Oscar that year and engineered one of the most memorable moments in Oscar history when he sent a young activist called Sasheen Littlefeather up to the podium to decline the award in his name, the point being to draw attention to Native American issues, especially in Hollywood's treatment of Indians. But mostly she got some boos, she did get a little bit of scattered applause, and did not get a chance to read out Brando's statement. The whole thing was a bit of a scandal, and it's the great granddaddy of the Oscars being used for political purposes, which is something I actually like about the Oscars. They can be pretty boring otherwise. As Brando himself observed about the mindset of the audience that night, their reaction was basically, "You're ruining our fantasy with the intrusion of a little reality." Brando followed his triumph with another huge performance a year later in Bernardo Bertolucci's film Last Tango in Paris, in which Brando played a despairing man who engages in a sexual experience with a younger woman while they remain anonymous to each other. The score for the film was by Gato Barbieri, an Argentina-born jazz man who managed to get some of the sound of, appropriately enough, the tango into his music. Music from Last Tango in Paris, composed by Gato Barbieri. The film was received in raptures from some quarters. The New Yorker's film critic Pauline Kael announced that Bertolucci and Brando have altered the face of an art form. And it also got puzzled looks from other quarters. But for Brando, the film turned out to be something of a last stand. I remember in his autobiography, he talks about using so much of himself for the film that he felt he never wanted to go that far again. And certainly nothing he did subsequently rose to the level of his previous work. Now, if you're a fan, you know that Brando was associated with a couple of giant and well-paying projects at the end of the 70s, namely his brief appearance in Superman and his eerie evocation of the renegade Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now. Both movies rely on music, a John Williams score for Superman, and a kind of a 60s jukebox collection, plus the Ride of the Valkyries in Apocalypse Now, but I don't know, neither of those speak musically to Brando's presence, really, and I found it kind of easy to leave them out today. As for the very mixed bag of occasional projects that followed, I would refer you to some very clever music from Don Juan DeMarco and a Dave Grusin score for A Dry White Season, but I couldn't quite make the case that the music speaks to Brando. Ah, but since our trailer has arrived anyway, we get a chance to sneak in a novelty from one of Brando's most notorious projects, the runaway production of Mutiny on the Bounty, released in 1962, during which the actor's eccentric behavior seemed to have been at its peak, I guess. That movie has a conventional, very large score by Bronislaw Kaper, Hollywood veteran, who spent time studying Tahitian music for some of the score. He had a lot of time. This production was going on for about 3 years, which is credited as a performance on the soundtrack to native Tahitians. Why include it here? Well, because Tahiti turned out to be an important place for Marlon Brando, as he married a Tahitian, raised Tahitian children, and bought his own island out there. So let's take 2 minutes of island music titled Native Feast from Mutiny on the Bounty. That's just a bit from Bronislaw Kaper's soundtrack to Mutiny on the Bounty, a film project that brought Marlon Brando under the sway of Tahiti, just as his mutinous character, Fletcher Christian, had in the original Bounty Unpleasantness. Before his death in 2004, Brando grew hostile to acting at times, although he kept making movies occasionally. But even those half-hearted appearances could not erase the power of Brando's impact. Maybe he really had altered the face of an art form, at least as far as acting was concerned. With his immediacy, his danger, his vulnerability, and that urge not to settle for the usual fakery. We leave off with more music from Leonard Bernstein's score for On the Waterfront. This cue is called Cab and Bedroom, which refers to that famous scene with Brando and Rod Steiger as his brother, confronting the fact that the brother sold out Brando's character when he was a promising boxer. I could have been a contender, you know. It's deservedly a classic scene, and yet it brings up the conflicting sides of the actor. Brando gives his all to the scene. He's fantastic in it, but when it came time to shoot Steiger's close-ups, Brando left the set because he had an appointment with his psychiatrist. Much to Steiger's irritation, he had to play his scene without his co-star. And yet, as the director Elia Kazan put it, who else could read, "Oh, Charlie," in a tone of reproach that is so loving and so melancholy and suggests that terrific depth of pain. I didn't direct that. Marlon showed me, as he often did, how the scene should be performed. I could never have told him how to do that scene as well as he did it. I hope you've enjoyed this musical look at Marlon Brando's career. I'm Robert Horton, and I thank you for listening to The Music and the Movies.